that was Laney Lou and the Bird Dogs playing us in. I'm Luke.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brent.
And this is the Grizz Fan Podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to give a shout out to the other Montana Mint Sports podcast.
Who?
The podcast that shall not be named. No, we're going to name it. We've been neglecting naming this podcast for weeks. Not out of hatred, but just out of our focus, our singular focus on the Grizz Fan Podcast.
Yeah, so it's the Montana Mint Sports Podcast. It focuses on Big Sky Conference football, primarily the Grizz and the Cats, and other topics they feel are of interest at that particular moment.
It features Hot Take Nate and Bear Tycoon, and they chop it up every week just like us, but not as good.
Not as good. They do offer some gambling, so I'll give that. Montana Parlay offers some gambling advice.
Yeah, he's actually pretty good at that.
You always wonder about guys that are really good at offering gambling advice. Like, do you have a problem we don't know about? Should we unpack this a little bit more?
I can tell you Montana Parlay is heavily invested in Bitcoin. So Idaho. So he better be good in the bets because he's losing his ass right now.
And he's probably going to take this opportunity to point out that I owe him a case of cold smoke over the Cat game last year. So maybe someday.
Sounds good. Let's get into it. Actually, I'm going to hit pause. One last thing before we recap the Grizz game. I want to give a shout out to the Hellgate Knights.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I know they're sort of a rival for you, Mike, being a football player at Missoula Sentinel.
You know, sure. Brent went there.
Yeah, I went to Hellgate. I was a varsity golfer.
Which is part of their problem right now is nobody's playing varsity football.
But they broke the losing streak, right?
I know. I'll tell you, interestingly enough, you draw a parallel to Sentinel. I was a freshman at Sentinel in 1999 when they broke their long losing streak. And it was the first game of the season and everybody rushed the field. And I mean, it was one of the more fun kind of football fan moments I've ever been a part of. So I can appreciate what those student fans were part of. But man, those players, like, good for those kids for sticking it out. I mean, the Hellgate forfeited a football season 2 years ago. I mean, have you ever heard of that?
No, that's crazy. I mean, that's good for them. I'm happy for them.
I'm happy for the coaches, too. I'm friends with one of their coaches. His name's Joe. And I've been on the receiving end of some dark text messages these last few years. And I was so happy for him to win. It felt like a win for me. So anyway, good job, Hellgate Knights.
Nice job. What do they say? KAK? Kick-ass Knights?
I think the principal always told us it was Knights or King. I don't know.
It's kick-ass.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's jump into the Grizz game. Recap. The Grizz hosted Sac State, and the Grizz came out on top is a simple way to recap the game. But that's not what you're here for. You need some complexity, some analysis. And that's really what Mike and Brent are for.
Yeah. So, 41-34. But, guys, have you had that much fun at a Grizz football game maybe since North Dakota State?
I don't think so. Not Washington Grizzly.
No. Not even close. That was the funnest game, absolutely, since North Dakota State.
And it's weird because it was, like, back and forth. And, you know, the defense, I mean, like, we gave them a ton of yards. But it was fun.
75 total points scored.
Yep.
We came back twice.
Twice, yep.
And it's one thing, you know, Brent and I have talked about this a little bit off the air, but you never felt like we were out of it. And that's kind of like we talk, you know, every pod we seem to point out a different thing, like that's a difference in how. But those players just believed they were going to do it. And they actually, you know, were down two scores before halftime. They just marched down the field, got a touchdown, all went about their business to go into half, down a score, and
yeah,
just kind of took care of it.
I mean, and that was a big turning point because you look at when Sacramento State went up by double score, 10 points? The safeties tackled each other, and the receivers off to the races, and it's just like, oh my God, what is going on? But it didn't faze them, and so I think we had that last week with Western Illinois where they fell down 14-0 really fast, but they fought back there. And again, we saw getting in a hole, but not letting your errors and execution completely cause a meltdown.
It reminds me a little bit of hearing Bobby speak a couple times before the season and him telling the audience, you know, I don't know if we're going to be worth a damn, but we're going to fight like hell and we're going to be tough.
I'd agree. Buss had a quote that kind of touched on that a little bit that we'll kind of unpack later on that I thought was kind of interesting. But yeah, so they start off the game, and once again, you know, we give up a big play touchdown to the opposing team. Elijah Dotson, their big, he's not really big, their star running back, I'll say, broke one off 59 yards on like the fourth play of the game.
Right through a pretty blatant hold, but we'll, you
know. Whatever. We'll talk about reffing a little later.
We'll get to officiating later.
But he took advantage of that unflagged hold and scampered damn near untouched the end zone.
Similar to last week, though, like, give up a big play to start the game, and you know, if you feel like the last couple of years that would have crushed us. But they came out. Coaches, credit to them, this offensive staff keeps kind of finding new ways to use the tremendous weapons on this team. Gabe Sulcer, true freshman out of Billings. Was Billings West?
I don't know.
One of the Billings schools.
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever.
We'll say West.
Sorry if it's Skyview or one of the other ones and we messed up on that.
It's not Central.
It's not Central. he goes 53 yards on an end around, untouched. Like the Sac State had no idea that was coming.
Yep. And when you watch that replay too, the design of the play was amazing, but the upfield blocking as well too. You had a tight end and two wide receivers sealing guys off 15 yards up the field, and of course, Sulcer showed the speed.
I think it was 87 running with him for a while. Was it Deming?
Deming.
And number six.
And Curran. Curran had a strong block. He wasn't just like, I got in the dude's way. He laid some wood on him.
Yeah, he put him on his back.
That's, you know, we'll talk about Curran a little bit more later in the game too, but that's one of the good things you always are going to get with Curran, and I think it's why he's continued to gain the trust of now two coaching staffs, is because he works hard on every play, whether he gets the ball or not. He's happy for his teammates, and he's just as excited to go lay a block.
So this is a conversation that played out between me and my roommate right after the game. He no longer lives in Missoula, but he keeps tabs on the Grizz, and he just texted me, like, Gabe! Exclamation point. And then very quickly was like, are they burning his red shirt?
So it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about it. The true freshman can, or any year, if they have a redshirt available, they can play four games at any point in the season and still redshirt. Gabe's now played two.
Yep.
Because he played Western Illinois.
Yep.
You could see that he's got the talent. So it's like, I love having him as a weapon. The one thing I sit in the back of my mind is like, man, should we be short-term conservative for like long-term benefit? Because he would be more of a contributor possibly next year after having redshirted than he's going to be this year. But you keep the home run threat if you play him this year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and Bobby, I think, said this. They plan to play him. You put your best guy on the field. You know, 4 years, it's tough to say what's going to happen. You could have something with an injury in his, you know, sophomore or junior year or something. And it's just hard to see how it plays out. But right now, we have a very talented wide receiver core, but I don't think we have anyone that can do what Gabe did in that play, like get to that corner and just leave everybody in the dust. So it's like, if you need a specific guy for that type of stuff, he's the dude. So I just say, if he's gonna put you in the win column, you got to use him.
Isn't that Jerry Lou McGee? Can't he do that?
Not that type of speed, though. Jerry
Shifty
would be dancing.
He's got a 99 agile.
Yeah. Yeah. In Madden, he's a 99 agile and probably like an 88 speed, where Gabe's probably like a 95 speed.
I kind of want to see, I respect both of your opinions. I kind of want to see him redshirt. I want to save that weapon. I want him to be mature. Like, this is the only reason why BYU is ever relevant, is they've got a bunch of 26-year-olds playing. We need we need an extra year, Gabe. I want him to get stronger and faster. And
but it is interesting because it's a great debate, and there's no right answer, and people on both sides of it will be convinced that they're right. Like, you play your best guys, and it doesn't matter. It's like long-term gain, I don't know. But we've got so much talent at wide receiver that's amazing that with all the talent we have at receiver, these coaches, there's something about Gabe that they're like, yeah, no, we got to get him, we get in there. And the other thing I'll notice is like, that's the only time he touched the ball during the game. But if you watch the scoring highlights, he was in on at least two of the other scoring plays. He's giving guys a high five in the end zone and stuff like that. So it's like, he's clearly out there. And I think it's just a matter of Snead getting comfortable with working him into his kind of array of weapons. Because we go back to kind of the whole, if Jerry Lou McGee is part of our running game at short yardage, you know, if we've got Jerry Lou on one side and Sulcer on the other, at least they can't stack up one side, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was awesome to see. But of course, Sac State comes back, answers that with a 80-yard drive in about 2 minutes, six plays. Dotson scored on a one-yard run. And it was one of those, like, I love and hate review in football. And he had scored the previous play, and they reviewed it and moved the ball out to, like, the
one-inch line. Yeah.
And it was, like, second down or third down. So it's like, they're going to score a touchdown. But then later in the night, I watched Oregon and Stanford and realized that maybe they wouldn't have. So always make them do it again.
That's why we play the game.
Yep. Did you see anything on that drive? I mean, the defense was, I don't know, they were getting shredded. I mean, there's no other way around it. Like, they had a bad first quarter.
Yeah, and I think, and this was something we saw with the Western Illinois game too, that middle of the field, 10, 15, 20 yards, it seemed like a spot that these two offenses have found a lot of open targets. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, again, they just kind of made their way right down the field pretty quickly too.
And you wonder if it's not, our scheme is giving, obviously, Buss and Olsen a big chance to get plays in the backfield. So you wonder if teams aren't waiting, and as long as we're not getting pressure on them, they're picking apart going back to the center of the field because the linebackers are attacking. That's just a crazy hypothesis. But
well, after that second score, I was pretty sad. I was thinking, and I was like, well, I think I know who the Big Sky Conference Offensive Player of the Week is going to be. And it's not going to be a Grizzly.
So, I can see how you were thinking that because he already had 100 and how many yards?
Two touchdowns, one quarter. I mean, but like so many things, I'm wrong.
It's funny because one thing that I feel has like been a staple, even going back to how the first time, it feels like there's always like the best player on the opposing team rises to the occasion. And we have had a lot of guys have career days against us, but not many of them win. So it's like one guy has this awesome day but can't carry the team to victory. But I feel like we see that a lot. So anyway, I tweeted about this from the pod's Twitter handle, which is at GrizzFanPod. Follow us.
Oh, yeah. Follow us at GrizzFanPod.
I don't know why we haven't been pushing that yet. We are amateurs. I was working the GSA tailgate, and I ran into a bunch of people wearing number 11 Grizz football jerseys. And I'm kind of like, I met a college gal first, and then she walked off to this group, and I noticed there's a bunch of people wearing 11 jerseys, and one says mom, and one says dad, and one says girlfriend. And I walked back up to her and was like, I don't know how I didn't put this together a second ago, but you must be Sneeds. And they were all really, you know, excited to be noticed. And I think most parents of players like to be kind of like, you know, I mean, you don't just randomly approach people, but it's like at a game and they're wearing their son's jersey. It's like, oh, we're glad to have him. So I told him how happy we were that Sneed had decided to come here because clearly he's this incredible athlete and we needed him. And then we talked a little bit about, you know, how elusive he is. And I said, you know, he's just had some of these runs. And his dad kind of looks at me seriously. And he says, you know, you guys really haven't seen him unleash one yet. And I just kind of laughed. And I was like, I mean, he's been awesome with the runs. So, I mean, it's like, I guess you're right. And then we kind of talked about other things. I asked him if they were worried about him holding up for a season, running so much. And they said, oh, no, he's tough and mobile, and he really doesn't take bad hits. And so we believe in him. I said, this is awesome. And then I went back to the tailgate and let him go. But Dalton Sneed's dad, I don't even know your name. You were correct. So what happened?
Yeah, next? So like very, very next possession. So kicked away to the Grizz. We line up. Sneed gets the ball. Does this crazy pitch fake. Puts the ball in his gut. He's got a hole on the left-hand side of the line. 80 yards later, he's in the end zone. And no one is catching him. Those Sac State defensive backs, which are, I don't know if they're incredibly talented. I know they had some injuries. They're speedy dudes, and they did not keep up with him.
Well, their safeties, all conference.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's good for something.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. I was watching the game with somebody who isn't a regular Grizz viewer, kind of a more of a fan from a distance, but he's at the stadium, and he's like, you know, you broke free from that, and you're thinking these guys are going to close on him. They've got the angles. And he just turned on the Jets and just took off. So 75 yards untouched in the end zone. One play, 75 yards, 11 seconds. No. Not a bad response.
No, yeah. No, did you pay attention to the offensive line on that play?
They opened the biggest hole I have ever seen them open this year.
So left guard Villanueva pulls, and the rest of the line washes to the left.
Down block left.
And they just, they plant all of Sac State on their ass. Like, the whole Sac State D-line is now on the ground with O-linemen's stomachs in their face. Villanueva, when he pulls, cleans up the linebacker. And it was beautiful. It was like, holy shit. It was like this amazing, like, just this great, like, progression from the O-line. And I know post-game, first thing Snead gave credit to was the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And he said he wished that the offensive line could be credited for the rushing.
I think Snead's ability to do this is so exciting because teams haven't been respecting his deep ball throw ability. Mm-hmm. So I know that, or I've noticed the safeties have been playing up and out and shading out. So when he gets to the second level, after Villanueva kicks out that middle linebacker, there's no one near him. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no one in front of him. And then it's just a foot race.
You know, he's got the speed. You can talk about, like, teams having a QB spy and stuff like that. But that's not going to work on him. I mean, they're going to be able to scheme away some of what he can do. But they're not going to be able to prevent him from breaking a few runs every game. I'm not saying he's going to score 75-yard touchdowns every game, but boy, today, he put it on him.
So I think this maybe segues perfectly into the apology I owe Mike for not thinking the offensive line would get any better. Or not like more proportionally better what would be a regular progression, but I think they really had a statement game up front.
I think they had a statement game. I think that it's probably too early for you to apologize for that because we got to see how the season goes, although I appreciate it. Anytime anybody ever tells me I'm right about something, you know, that feeds the old ego. But they did. Like, something kind of clicked for them in a way that it hasn't up to date. They even, I mean, like, yeah, Steve got hit a couple times, but he actually had some time in the pocket today, too. And what's interesting is we were told that Sac State might have the best across-the-board D-line we've played yet. So who knows?
Yeah, and they were without George Obina, who wound up not playing in the game. He played the week before, all-conference, first-team defensive end. So they were missing their big playmaker. Their other guy, though, is leading the conference in sacks. I don't know if he really was much of an impact. So, yeah, I mean, I think there was even a quote from Bobby post-game where he talked about Snead taking just that extra second and trusting what the O-line was doing for him. I think Snead, I heard a quote from him. I think he took two sacks, but he said he only took one, and it was his fault for making a dumb play or something. So he took his own fault for a sack. But yeah, no, things got a little better.
You know, Snead, you can see why coaches like Snead, and you can also see why this team might have needed Snead. And that's coming from me. That's actually, Luke and Brent would tell you, is probably a real
high praise
because, you know, I've been skeptical of the running Jetson out of town, but Snead's special. I think that if he could put together the passing game, which we'll talk about, we're going to have an offense that's going to be able to utilize so many weapons that teams aren't going to be able to scheme for us. Like, maybe we won't be one-dimensional. But he also has a it quality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I really like his excitability. Like, he's very passionate. I think you mentioned maybe in the first week's pod that we haven't had a quarterback that kind of led with his chest. And in the post game, he's like the best leader. He's given credit to everyone. He's not taken any of it for himself.
And in the one loss, it was, you know, he took blame. You got to be happy 4 weeks in that Dalton Snead is your quarterback and not somebody else's.
Absolutely agree.
You talk about the O-line, so maybe a good point to kind of bring that up before we jump into the second quarter here. Eastwood actually had 18 carries for 72 yards. You know what that averages?
Is that 3.4 yards a carry?
That's 4 yards a carry.
But what's the median, Mike?
But when you factor in, you know, Snead had a ridiculous day, 206 yards on the ground. He actually had more than that, but the sacks in college football cancel out yards. Big run from Sulcer. So it's like, even without that, though, our O-line didn't look too bad because Calhoun chipped in another 20 yards on 5 carries. So it's like, you know, that's just under 100 yards from the running back, just averaging 4 yards a pop. That's a big deal.
It is. Yeah. Converted a handful of first downs on the ground and had a couple good long runs. It was nice.
Second quarter,
Not great.
We got a field goal, so we got the lead. And then Sack puts together 2 straight touchdowns. So it went from a 17-14 Grizz lead to a 28-17 Sac State lead. Touchdowns were another Dotson run, 66 yards. So this guy's at like 179 yards or something through 2 quarters. And then, the most infuriating one, though, was we stalled out on offense a little bit in that second quarter, which we've been known to do. We were not consistent. Sack comes back out after having the lead, gets the ball back, and their quarterback hits Jalen Ratliff for what turns into a 77-yard touchdown. Jalen Ratliff should have been tackled where he caught the ball for maybe about 25 yards. Instead, our guys tackled each other. I think it was Nash and one of the safeties, like, tackled each other or ran into each other. And to this guy's credit, he kept his balance, and then away he went.
It's a not top 10.
Yeah.
Not top 10 play of the week.
So, and that was that moment. So now the Grizz are down. It's 28-17. The crowd is a little bit out of it. People are thinking, uh-oh, what's going on here? And instead, and like we talked about before, the Grizz get the ball back and put together a drive. A little bit of controversy in it, but once again, it ends with a touchdown.
Yeah.
Dalton Snead's feet to make it a 4-point game come the half.
It was one of those where he just kind of willed it in. You know, it's like he broke it open, got in. It was a 12-yard run. It was one of those weird things where we got down 2 scores, but in years past, you would have thought, this is it. Because we're going to keep scoring, but we're going to keep giving it up, and this is it. But it doesn't feel like that. They came back. They put together a good drive. We're going to halftime down 28-24. Knowing we get the ball back, I would be curious, but it always felt like with Coach Stitt the last 3 years that on our first drive of a game and our first drive of the second half, we often did nothing. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think at one point we looked at the stats and it was first possession of both first quarter and third quarter, very low amount of points. Yeah.
But it seems like our drives to start games and our drives to start halves seem to be a lot more positive. I don't think every one of them has been a scoring play, but we've put together positive momentum on them.
Yeah.
It's been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So they come out third quarter. Snead runs in another touchdown, 38 yards. This one was awesome. Because he ran it in from 38 yards out, danced down the sideline. You thought he was out, but kept it in. And there's an awesome photo from Brooks Nuanez of Skyline Sports showing Snead just diving for the pylon. I mean, it's one of the best sports photos I think I've ever seen from the standpoint of the guy being right at there at the right time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, and it was that same kind of play with Snead again. And just incredible athleticism from the guy.
Sac State comes back with the field goal, so we're tied 31-31 for the third. The fourth, the Grizz kind of started to put them away. You could kind of feel like, yeah, I think the Grizz are going to win this.
They had an answer for everything Sac State had whipped out. And, you know, they only picked up a field goal in that third quarter, right? Like, Sac only picked up 3 points, which was, it felt like the tide was turning compared to the offensive explosion we saw in the first half.
And I think I saw somewhere that after this sack touchdown in the third quarter, until they scored the meaningless last drive of the game, they had something like 9 yards of offense. And it's like, you want to talk about a defense that was maligned all day, rising to the occasion when it mattered. Like, hey, we need you guys to stop these guys because we're moving on them and we're going to win the game. They rose to the occasion.
Yeah, I think they only converted 1/3 down, and that might have been in that last drive of theirs in the second half. I mean, the Grizzly defense made a pretty damn good adjustment after getting torched in the first half.
1 for 8 third down conversions for Sac State in the second half.
Yep, that's impressive.
And then who would have known, picking up Matt Rensvold in my Big Sky Conference Fantasy Football League would have paid off this week, but damn it, it did.
Man, we've got a lot of young guys playing.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But that was 4th and 1 well, fourth and goal on the one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hell of a play, too.
Did you guys have any doubts that Bobby was going to go for it there? No. Or did you think he was pulling out the kicker?
No, I figure there in that situation, you go for it because if you don't get it, Sac State is on the one-yard line in the north end zone. They're not going to be able to hear the snap count. I mean, that's like if there's ever a place to go for it, it's there.
So we drop back and Dalton Snead finds Matt in the end zone, zips the pass right into him.
And it was the type of play that shows that Snead's a better passer than maybe people realize and maybe that, you know, I or other people have given him credit for, because he had to stand there and let that play develop. He, like, the play calls for the tight end to plant in the end zone, assuming that the guy covering him is going to go past him, and then the QB hits him when the guy's going past him. So Renswell's wide open.
Yeah. He looked off the cover. The cover chased to the flat there.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of looking off the cover, we didn't talk about this on, I think, his 12-yard run in the first or second quarter. But Snead had one of the coolest.
Yes.
And you know who it reminded me of is our buddy Dylan. In middle school,
no.
When we'd play football on the playground, he would always be the option quarterback.
Of course, he demanded to play quarterback.
Right? Oh, God. And it was a Notre Dame fan, and they were probably still running the option at that point. But anyway, so Dylan would run the option, and it'd be so infuriating because he'd fake the damn pitch, even if he was 20 yards upfield and there was no one around.
There's no running back.
And, you know, it's like here we are playing touch football on the playground, and the fake pitch is juking us out. But that's what it reminded me of, because he's like, he's past the line of scrimmage. He's not throwing that ball. He does this, like, fake toss, both the sack defenders like jump up, and Snead just turns and
runs right in.
Runs in.
That's awesome. Great. I like the point you made though about saying, of course, we're going to go for it on fourth and one, because if you don't convert, Sac State has their back to the north end zone. They showed up.
It was loud. As a north end zone guy, I can tell you it was loud.
That was so cool. When we talked about how fun of a game that was, I mean, the north end zone had a serious role in some of the delay of game false start penalties.
I think they even got praise from Bobby after the game, because he said the north end zone should be the MVP, because there's that point where Sac had kicked the third quarter field goal. They had a fourth and one, and they come out on the field on the two or something, intending to, you know, probably give the damn ball to Dotson again. And they get a false start, and now it's fourth and six, so they kick a field goal instead.
Not only get a false start, they force her to use a timeout.
That's right.
And got a false start. So it's like, you know, you talk about things that matter in the second half. That was a lot of fun.
You just can't simulate that in practice if you're one of these other teams. I'm just going to sit the blanket other. There's maybe just a handful of teams that experience this week in and week out. I just think it's so cool. And I think it's cool for the Sac State players like 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun to hear some of the guys who are still dancing around in the pros who played as visitors in Washington Grizzly Stadium to kind of talk about it and be like, oh, you're going to Seattle this week. And they'll be like, yeah, it's loud, but so is Montana. So it's like, I have played in this noise, and for it to be legitimately true is a lot of fun.
So why do you still have a speaking voice today? I thought we were going to have to delay a
day.
I've
been sitting in the north end zone for 25 years, so it's conditioned. You know, you just, your lungs are ready. You're ready to go. So I've gotten older, I realize I need to sit down a little bit more because, you know, you yell a lot at the refs, your blood pressure goes up, you got to make sure you don't pass out.
You had your son with you, so you had to, you know, like, lead by example. Be a little calm here and there.
My son has come in now two games in a row, and he had a great time. You know, my dad, we sit in the front row in the north end zone, and my dad for decades now has brought giant bags of candy with him. And when they score touchdowns, he just passes the candy bag around to the people around us, and they take Tootsie Rolls and whatever else. And James thinks that's the best part of the game. But he's getting the high fives down, and he's a big sports fan. He's a big basketball kid, but he's kind of picking up the scoring and stuff like that. And so I think on the fourth and one touchdown pass from Snead, like, we're giving high fives, and I lifted him up to give high fives to some of the people because he'd kind of been standing on the ground, and that scared the hell out of me. So that was a mistake on Dad, but it got sorted out. After that, they come back. They have another great drive. We get down inside the 5-yard line, but then you can tell they don't want to do anything to to waste it because they know at this point in the game, a field goal is two scores, and that's probably going to win it. So they're probably more cautious than they would have been. They didn't put it in the air, I don't think.
No, they didn't. And so Snead once again has a big rush. How far to go?
It was a long one because he almost scored.
What impressed me was we had back-to-back drives of 9 plays, both around 4 minutes long. And I noticed in your Big Sky Conference write-up, you had the breakdown of time of possession.
Yeah.
We just controlled the ball. After icing them in the third quarter, we come around and eat up most of the fourth quarter on these two long drives.
Yeah, so time of possession, Montana in the second half. 8 minutes, 11 seconds in the third, and 9 minutes, 40 seconds. That's 17 minutes, 51 seconds. So that's almost huge. 3 minutes advantage. And, throughughout the game, they held a total of 31-42. So,
wow. Yeah. You don't like that.
Yeah. They help keep the defense a little bit more fresh, too.
So Snead had another huge run to set that whole thing up.
Yeah, 50 yards. And then, of course, the funny thing, I think that next play, I think it was some sort of option thing, and he stumbles.
Yep.
So he loses 5 yards. And so I said to the guy sitting next to me, Sack has 2 timeouts. Bobby is not going to throw this ball. It's going to be the 2 most boring run plays you'll ever see because he just wants those timeouts off the board, and he'll be happy with the field goal. That's exactly what he did. So Bobby's still predictable in some ways.
Yep. Zmenza comes in, who's still perfect on the year. Let's all knock on wood.
Woo!
Perfect on the year on field goals. Kicks the field goal, so we're up 10 with very little time left, like a couple minutes, right? Minute and a half. Minute 21.
Okay.
And Sac State actually moves back down the field really easily, but then kind of stalls out, gets the fourth down, has to kick a field goal, hits the meaningless field goal, tries for an onside kick, doesn't get it. Snead takes a kneel down, and the Grizz win one of the more exciting games we've seen.
Yep. And, that sack drive that they wound up kicking their second field goal, it ended on a Josh Buss sack.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Buss was the Grizz nominee for Defensive Player of the Week. He had 3 sacks in the game, all 3 sacks on third down. So he stopped 3 drives with sacks, including, the one at the end, which if Sac State would have gotten the end zone, that would have been a little bit more of a nervous game. But he kept him out.
Choate at Bozeman likes to say stats are for losers, but that stat is not for losers. You have sacks to stop 3 different drives. That's a game-changing stat. So
oh, yeah.
We'll take
that. That's clutch.
Yep. Biggest takeaway from the game, obviously, Dalton Snead, my God. 206 rushing yards, which was awesome. But what's the best part of his day? He threw for more. And he had 234 passing yards. So it's like he's not like we've got this phenomenal running quarterback, but he's still throwing the ball. And it's like the knock on like the MSUs of the last couple of years or people like that where it's like they could run it to no end, but they were never consistent passing. And to Snead's credit, to Rosie's credit, to Pease's credit, they have consistently put a passing game together. This week, I feel like, was the closest to breaking one of the long passes. Still didn't get any, but the overthrows were real close. He had a great ball on the sidelines, but Torrey went out of bounds on it.
Yep. Yeah, and we talked about that one, and it was kind of funny because it was his most accurate, thrown a little bit into the wind. maybe held up a little bit of that juice into the ball and put it right there, but unfortunately, Torrey got a little shoved out, but still, you can't be the first guy touching it, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And for all that, Snead was the Big Sky Conference Player of the Week. He won one of the national awards.
Root Sports.
The Root Sports. Well, yeah. The Root Sports is the Big Sky.
Oh, that's the Big Sky. That's right.
And then There's CS Madness or something like that, some website that said he was the National Player of the Week, too.
But stats made him an honorable mention, I think it was. Yeah.
But what's interesting is there were a lot of big performances in the Big Sky. Troy Henderson comes back for the Cats at MSU and plays QB and runs for 200 and something yards at quarterback.
What the hell are they doing there?
I don't know. We'll talk about that in a second. I just don't get it. Couple other things that are kind of interesting to me. It was kind of fun to see Calhoun back there running. He's just a different runner. He's something that the team doesn't have. The difference between him and Eastwood, I think Eastwood will get there. I think that there's something to be said for experience and kind of learning it. But Eastwood gets hit, and you can tell he tries to use his strength to, push him forward, but his feet don't necessarily move the same way. It's kind of like, you're hitting me and I'm going to use my strength to get whatever I can but you're stopping me. Whereas Calhoun, when he gets hit, his legs just keep on churning. And there was one run that like looked like it was going to be stopped for like 3 yards. And Calhoun in the pile got a first down out of it.
Yeah, they turned it into a 15-yard gain.
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome. I hope that we get to see more Calhoun. He took a vicious hit. Vicious hit.
I don't know. That's he's had some concussions in his past, and we don't know if he has a concussion from this, but I have to imagine he is somewhat concussed.
I don't know how he doesn't.
Holy crap.
Tough to say. So let's unpack it, because we've got two plays in the game, both that, you know, fans believe are targeting.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one came in the second quarter, the drive where Snead wound up doing the pump fake touchdown. One or two plays, maybe the play right before it. He floats a little bit of a prayer to Deming over the middle, a little too deep. Deming goes up to get it, puts one arm up. Next thing you know, Mr. Harriel is throwing a shoulder right into what turns out to be his shoulder on the replay. Three flags fly in. Targeting's called. They review it. They wipe everything out, even the personal foul.
Which no unnecessary roughness.
Nothing. Which seemed weird on the replay. It really looked to me like personal foul for sure. I didn't think targeting on that.
So what's interesting on that one is that's the one where you can make a case to me. It's like maybe it wasn't targeting, although I still think he kind of launched because he jumped up to hit him.
He launched.
Yeah. So it's like to me it was targeting. But apparently because the refs called targeting on the field and they reviewed it and determined it wasn't targeting, they can't then retroactively say, oh, then it was unnecessary roughness. What they need to do is call unnecessary roughness and the play will get reviewed and it might be for targeting, but I think that's a bad rule. I mean, like, I think they need to be able to give the refs, like, if we're reviewing the play, we got to review the play because that was, I don't care what it was, it was unnecessary. Like, he could have launched him in his shoulder in his midsection and been more successful, but he was going for the big glory hit.
And how often do you see three officials throw flags right at the same spot? I mean, usually, like, if one guy throws it, they're like, okay, Bob's got it, you know? But not this. It's like all three threw a flag.
Like, that's a traffic accident. Like, something nasty happened there. I just thought when it went to replay, I felt, well, they're going to come out with something because they're going to fault on the side of player safety. And they didn't.
It was amazing. But it's like, you want to talk about faulting on the side of player safety. It's like, at least they reviewed that and looked at it.
Yep.
The Calhoun hit, not only did they not throw a flag, but he was down on the field for a few minutes, so the review booth had plenty of time to look at that. And they didn't even stop the game to look and see if that was targeting.
The only more obvious helmet-to-helmet contact I've ever seen is when, like, Monday Night Football takes the two helmets and, like, smashes them together, and then it, like, blows up, and there's the Monday Night Football lettering.
Fair.
So that one, I mean, Calhoun, what was it? He took a little dump off, like a screen or something,
yep,
wasn't it?
And
again, you know, showing a little bit of rust. He's standing pretty tall, but not necessarily totally your fault, and the linebacker, I thought it was the safety, but on the replay, it looks like one of their linebackers launches helmet right into the side of the head.
It's like, I don't see how the Big Sky Conference can't say that's targeting. It's interesting. Houck said today in his press conference it's a clean hit. But, you know, you hear people now talking about, well, so Houck said it's a clean hit. It's not targeting, and you guys are dumb for thinking it. But it's like, no, what the hell is Houck going to say? He can't criticize the refs. He knows they're going to ref the game again. He knows that he could get suspended by the Big Sky. But I guarantee you, behind the scenes, those coaches turned that film into the Big Sky and said, what the hell?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're not going to win any battles by pleasing your fans. He knows all this is going to happen behind the scenes, and the Big Sky will hopefully rectify the situation. So he's just saying what he has to say.
Exactly. And Brent made a good point on Twitter that this is typical Bobby. Like, he doesn't want to give his team excuses.
Yeah, and so, and that was kind of my take because there was the comments on it. And so, regardless of probably what he actually thinks externally and probably to most of the team, he's just going to say, it's a clean hit. Do your job. Play the game. It's the way this stuff goes.
Nothing we can do about it.
There's nothing we can do about it. And again, that's like the culture that he's working on, because in the past few years, You would not hear that. You would hear the opposite. It would be maybe some finger pointing. It would be something else. And so again, maybe a little bit more of just puffing up your chest for the culture change or something, doing it for the culture. But you know, and then what was interesting, so I tweeted that, and of course Andrew Schmidt, former Grizz player.
Pod's favorite Hal Garrett 1.0 former player.
He
backup.
And he tweeted at Grizz Fan Pod, sup.
Yeah.
So
maybe future guest Andrew Schmidt, I don't know.
That'd be great. But so he said, I guarantee you, he told the team something along the lines of, it's football, don't complain and do your job, we'll take care of it.
And you know, honestly, that's the reaction you want from the coach. No excuses. Those guys in the locker room are going to know he has their back. And that's one thing I imagine those players at this point recognize, that Bobby loves this program and is going to have their back.
Yeah. But sometimes you get earholed. That was fucking cheap.
Oh, man. It was gross. It was just gross. A couple times we settled for field goals. We should be getting some scores. We're not converting third downs at maybe the rate we would like to be. So if you want to talk about things to pull away that we still need to be working on offense, that's that. Defense, same thing we've been talking about. If the QB gets time, they're going to find someone over the middle. It's just the weakness of our defense and has been for a decade.
And you saw a couple plays where, again, some corners flash their youth. They flash their inexperience. I recall a deep ball that it was hell of a catch. It was right in front of the tunnel. Looked like their QB was sacked and just kind of chucks a ball up the sideline. Justin Calhoun in close coverage, but he kind of quit on the play, didn't look back to the ball. Realizes real quickly it's coming and tries to fight for it because he knows he's beat a little deep by the receiver. Guy still hauls it in. I mean, you just saw some little things. Again, it's inexperience. It's not like a critique, but it's stuff these guys.
It's just with playing time with him just switching back to corner, he's going to learn to turn for the ball more. It seems like he's getting picked on a little bit, but I'm still overall impressed with our cornerback play. Nash is not getting picked on as much, I don't think.
Well, when you got two picks, touchdown, and all sorts, a couple fumble recoveries, I think they're going to maybe leave you alone and go with the other guy.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The only other points I had was I wanted to give a big thumbs up to the special teams. They cleaned up their mistakes from last week or the previous weeks. They look good. And one more thing, I think, Brent, you wrote about this in your eGrizz recap of the game, was we didn't see as much Samuel Akem. And I imagine that just has to do with what we were trying to accomplish offensively. I was surprised, though. The only time he really got a lot of reps was after Curran kind of had a big drop.
Yeah, second big drop of the game, too.
Second big drop.
Yeah, so, and that surprised me, too. I had someone get back to me. Maybe he was a little dinged up, Akem, but he played a couple series, had a catch, made a guy miss. You know, I mean, he wasn't playing like a guy that was hurt. But, you know, and so we said we'll talk about Curran later, so maybe a good segue, maybe not. But, you know, he had two drops in the first half that, you know, it's a little bit of his characteristic. The first one was tougher, but, you know, off his hands. Second one was bad.
It was tougher because it was like on a rope.
Over the shoulder.
Fast over the shoulder. But, I mean, you got to catch that, especially because he would have scored a touchdown. I mean, and it was just mental. Like, he just didn't get his hands out. And it's like he knew it the second that he just turned around. And then he had a drop later on. It's like, that's like the bad Keenan Curran. And then the good Keenan Curran pops up and makes this crucial catch on a drive in the second half. And it's just like,
he made two. Yeah, he made two crucial catches.
Like, and
he
could just shut those drops down.
He reminds me of J.R. Smith. It's like the more difficult the catch, the more likely he is to make it. With JR, it's like the harder the shot, the like more ill-advised the situation, he's going to make that stupid shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it felt like for Keenan this game. Both of those balls seemed catchable. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean,
I'm sure in film they said you got to catch both of those. And it's one thing, it's like you talk about all he brings to the team. He's clearly a leader. He's one of the first guys that vocally bought into Hauk. He's very much like, you know, we play for our coach. He blocked on the Sulcer, so it's like he does all those things, and it's like that's why it's easy for the coaches to give those guys second chances. But it's like when you've got Sammy Akem sitting right behind you, breathing down your neck, at some point those drops are going to come back.
Yeah. And Akem's got 3 touchdowns on the year receiving, and I don't think anyone else has more than one. And so it's like he's the red zone guy, and he didn't get a single snap or rep in any red zone visit that I saw, which surprised me.
It's interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch because we got a lot of talent and we got a lot of receivers that are going to want the ball. And to that end, it's like I feel like the game plan called for we got to get Torrey a little bit more involved, and they took some chances, and oh, we were close. And so we're going to get there with that. And if they improve even 10% on those deep and intermediate passes, this offense is going to be so hard to scheme for. Because if you can take away the run and Snead can just chuck it down the field, holy cow, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Players of the game, who are yours?
Undoubtedly, Matt Renswold. I wish I had a Big Sky Conference Fantasy Football League just so I could have said actually picked him up. We should start that next year.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, it's got to be Dalton Snead.
I was going to say, let's take the NFL approach and just give Dalton Snead the MVP award for the game, because clearly he put it away. On offense, other than Snead, it's a toss-up. There were a lot of guys.
I want to give it to the offensive line.
Hey, that's a good one.
Give it to the whole position group. They kicked ass. They had some players come in, like Cy Sermon looks like he's comfortable.
Which is great, because he's new to the position.
He hasn't played it for over a year. Like, he's been there for months, and he came in, and I think he's really starting to figure it out. So, offensive line, I think it's my offensive player of the game.
That's fair. Defense?
Josh Buss. Yeah. Mr. Clutch. The stat Brent talked about, the 3 sacks on 3rd downs, that's incredible.
It's crazy. Your guys?
Yeah, so, I mean, Snead and Buss, obviously. I would say, I always think about, the honorable mention, like I said a couple weeks ago. Jerry Louis McGee, guy had 91 receiving yards on 6 catches, and I think a handful of them were 3rd down conversions. But maybe his best play of the game was his punt return, where we were at a point, I think it was in the 4th quarter, where the Grizz and Sack had traded a couple punts, and that Sack's punter could smash the ball. And it looked like we were about to be pinned deep, but outkicked the coverage a little bit. Jerry takes that ball from the 5, gets it up to midfield. And at that point, it all of a sudden turned the tables. Very few errors from him, special teams. Even the onside kick, he at the end of the game, he puts it in his hands, smartly runs right out of bounds, and game's over. So
wasn't messing with that at all.
No.
It's like the coach probably talked to him a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't mess with it. Don't run it back. We don't need a hero.
Mike, what about you?
So obviously, I mean, Snead was by far the player of the game. I think Louis McGee, for what he continues to contribute to our kind of in-between deep passing and running game, is huge for us. So those are them. And I would just, Buss and Olsen, the linebacker duo. I mean, it's like we knew Buss had the potential to be great again, because he has been, but the injury thing. Olsen, we just knew he had potential. But it's like 4 weeks into the season, are there 2 better linebackers of a duo in the league or even the FCS? Like, my God.
They're phenomenal athletes and are ball hawks. Just have a nose for the position.
So Olsen had, I want to say, how many more tackles?
15.
So Olsen now has 25 more tackles than the next leading tackler in the Big Sky.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, he's 4 games in and has 55 tackles on the season already.
And Josh Buss, only guy in the league this year to have 3 sacks in 1 game. Like, my God.
We always seem to have some really great linebackers. What is that? I mean, this is like when we had Coil and Tripp, right? Like, those guys were a phenomenal duo. And we had John Canangata.
Mm-hmm.
Was that right? He was pretty damn good, too. Yeah, is just so fun.
Well, Buss would have been a tie recruit.
He would have been, yep. Fifth-year guy.
Olsen.
Stitt? He's a sophomore, isn't he? Yes.
So he's a sophomore, but he redshirted, so this is his 3rd year in the program. So, yeah, he would have been a Stitt recruit. I don't know. I mean, you gotta say it's luck at some point, because with as many different coaching staffs as we've had in this run of great linebackers, and it's every time they graduate, you're like, oh man, this is a bummer, we're losing these guys, and it's like two of them go to the NFL, one goes to the CFL, and then we reload. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no science behind it, but you look at the guys that are the special team standouts this year, or especially the year when you have someone graduating. So Josh Buss is gone next year, although I think we know Jace Lewis is going to be the guy that steps up and takes the job when Josh is gone. But Dante Olsen was a stud on special teams last year, and he finished, I looked it back up, he finished second team all-conference voting for special teams player. And so, I mean, people knew he was coming up. I don't think people expected this type of just explosion in productivity in 4 weeks, but I'm loving it. I mean,
he's one of those guys that's got a nose for the ball and he finds it.
This guy's on pace for 160 tackles this
year.
That's
insane. That's just insane. It's not even fair.
Dante. He's got a fun name to say. Say it.
Dante.
Dante.
My honorable mention this week goes to the coaches. I have forgotten what it's like to have fun halftime adjustments. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, look at our last 2 weeks where our defense has gotten shredded in the first half and they figured it out.
Yeah. I didn't even know what I was missing. Yeah. I forgot about that. It's like in a relationship. No.
Oh, man. No.
But you got to say, though, it is very, very refreshing because I remember back to that goddamn Eastern Washington game last year where we were up 24-9. And I'm talking to people who are like, oh, my God, we're going to beat Eastern Washington. It was halftime. And it's like I've seen enough of – and I was like, this game is not over. This is not over. This is not over. This is not over. And sure as shit,
I will attest. I went to his tailgate and talked to him at halftime, and that's what he said.
I mean, Mike and I are having a beer, and all these people are running up, and they're like, we're going to beat Eastern. Oh, my God, this is amazing. And we're like, no. Like, just we need to keep playing. We need to keep going. And it's like I haven't had that feeling yet this year where it's like – with these games where it's like, oh my God, I just don't know. And it's like you have more faith that this coaching, that what they're working on, the buy-in from the players, that they're going to make the adjustments. And I mean, sometimes it didn't work, Western Illinois, but other times it has. So
yeah. Yeah. Thing about Western Illinois is like, it wasn't coaching, it was just young guys.
Yeah.
It fell apart.
Yep.
It is what it is. That happens at the end of the season, it's coaching. But early in the season, it's just young guys not being experienced.
Yep.
Let's jump to wrap up the Big Sky really quick. Let's go through the picks. Idaho, UC Davis. Both Luke and I picked UC Davis. And as Luke pointed out, that goes in line with his poll picks. But Luke, we're going to give you another chance to get off the Idaho bandwagon or stay on the Idaho bandwagon.
I think I'm going to stay on the Idaho bandwagon just for one more week.
All right.
Are they playing Northern Colorado?
They're playing Portland State. Oh!
He's right. Going to be like the Cats.
So what happens if they lose to Portland State?
If they lose to Portland State, they're going to shut down their football program. There's a tremendous thread on their fan message board that it's just like, we joke about our buddies who are Raiders fans, like, hate watching Khalil Mack. The Idaho fans, like, can you imagine what it's like to be an Idaho fan right now?
What do you think their season tickets are selling for now?
$100.
For the season.
For the season. Free parking.
Free parking and popcorn. Yeah. It's like the Osprey game. It's like, we will give you more than the value of the ticket and food. Just go. So Sac State, Montana, we both got that right. Cal Poly, Eastern Washington. Eastern destroyed Cal Poly. Destroyed them. So Eastern's good. Idaho State, North Dakota. We both picked North Dakota, and we were both wrong. Like, what the hell?
I almost lost maybe a combined $1,000 on this game. Because shortly before the game, one of our friends texted out,
Oh yeah!
Oh my God! They're like, I just saw the line for the Idaho State-North Dakota game. Idaho's favored, -7. And I texted four different people, like, if you know a bookie,
put money
lay
on
a few hundred bucks down for me, I'll cover it. Thankfully, none of my friends are gamblers.
But it's crazy. I mean, obviously, the bookies noticed something we didn't, but it's like, after North Dakota went out and upset Sam Houston on the road, I'm like, oh, shit, North Dakota's for real? Then they go get lose at home to Idaho State.
They're ranked 22nd at the time.
Not anymore.
Nope.
I mean, Idaho State. And I mean, I will say, credit to Idaho State. You know, Fantasy spent a lot of time with Hauk. he wasn't the greatest coach in the world, but he's not a bad coach. They've got some former Grizz on there. Ferreter went back. I mean, I don't... they're not ever going to be a great program in my mind, but maybe their coaching staff is getting them into mediocrity instead of the cellar. I don't know. I mean, that's a big win.
I went to read about the game, and it sounds like wide receiver Mitch Geller caught a 67-yard touchdown over Deion Harris, who was a All-American cornerback last year.
Wow.
So they man him up all game long, and Idaho State has the sack to throw at him late in the game, and he just got beat. That said, Idaho State, their defense showed up to play in the second half. That's going to be – that changes a lot about what I think when it comes to Idaho State.
Because one thing I'll say on it is like it gives me hope that some of these games that I've got on some people's schedules that I think are body bags aren't body bags. Like, at least you know they could put up a fight, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Man. So, Montana State, Portland State. Luke picked Portland State. I picked MSU. I really hoped Luke was going to be right on this, but he wasn't. Southern Utah, Northern Arizona. Luke picked Southern Utah. I picked NAU. Did we decide if Cookus was back for that? Because NAU won. It was at home. I don't actually think Cookus was back for that, now that I think about it. Which makes me think that Southern Utah is going to be a real demoralized team by the time we play them.
Hopefully.
Because, I mean, they've, what are they, 0-4
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for a team that was picked to be maybe in the upper 2 or 3 of the Big Sky by the polls.
Yeah.
Man, cupboard's bare there.
So
it's a tough one.
On the Bozeman State and Portland State game, you did read the quote from Portland State's coach about the game.
Oh, no.
Did you hear this?
No.
Did you hear this?
No.
This was before the game. Okay, I'm going to read this, okay?
Yeah.
This is, I believe, in an interview to Skyline Sports, and it's funny because a couple of my, I won't call them friends, Bobcat acquaintances. No, Corey, he's a good guy. He's a friend. I'll call him a friend, even though he's a Cat fan. Okay, this is direct quote, Barnum. This is going to be a classic Montana State team. They're going to come in here and try to bully us out of the stadium. That's just their M.O., you play some finesse teams. This is not a finesse football team. These guys do not wear undershirts. These guys do not wear cutoff socks. If it was legal, they would be having a beer at halftime. They're old school. They want to fight you. When Choate is talking to the team and Gregorak is combing his hair in the mirror, these guys wish they were smoking a cigarette and having a Budweiser. That's the type of team they are. They're blue-collar kids. I love them. I love watching them. Of all the teams in the league, this is the team I like.
Man, Bruce Barnum is a gift to the Big Sky in so many different ways.
He might be a shitty coach with a terrible team, but he's got some great quotes.
Oh, you know who that kind of reminds me of a little bit? Is Kramer.
Yeah.
He was the king of, like, blowing up his opponent with, you know, smoke up their ass on, like, oh, they're men's men, and, you know, we can't help but hope to compete with them. And, boy, and you know Choate, who's so immature, he's probably eating that up. He's like, guys, did you see what they said about us?
Sometimes teams post quotes from other teams, you know, to, like, give you motivation, but I think Choate probably posts that one, like, inside his wallet so he can just read it to himself and like get all sappy and proud.
You know how when you dated a girl in high school and they put your picture on their dashboard? Did this ever happen to you? You must not have dated the right girls in high school.
They were not infatuated like
all the girls were. This quote on the dashboard of his car, so when he's driving in the morning, he looks at the speed limit, he has to see this quote every morning. It's like, oh my god, this is exactly what I wanted. Well, that's a good find there. So, we talked about Southern Utah, Northern Arizona, Northern Colorado, Weber. Weber won fairly easily on that one. Looks like maybe they're putting together an offense, although I still think Weber is more one-dimensional than they were last year. I think they're a good defensive team, but we'll see how it goes. One or two more weeks and things are going to start to shape up a little bit. For the week, Luke went 4-3. It's 31-10. For the week, I went 6-1, 33-8. So a little bit of normalcy returning to the world here.
Well, go ahead and feel good about that picking the Cats to win.
You're right. Like, you're right. I don't have an answer for that.
Do you know what time it is, Mike?
Do I want to know what time it is?
Maybe you don't, but Brent does.
I do want to know what time it is.
It's time for the check down.
Oh, no.
This is the segment where I ask Mike stupid questions quickly, and Mike hopefully gives me quick responses.
So to your credit, this segment's the first real Twitter interaction we've gotten from our fans. Somebody asked what my problem was with visors. So there you go.
They cost the same as hats, but it's missing material.
What if it's raining? Your hair, you know, it's bros. It's dude bros.
With a lot of gel in their hair.
You know who probably wore a visor a lot in college? Kavanaugh. Different conversation.
First question.
Moving along.
Moving on.
Buy or sell? Dalton Sneed's beard.
Oh, I'm buying that. I am buying that.
Parks. Glacier or Yellowstone?
Glacier.
Fenway or Wrigley?
Wrigley.
Chan Ho or Lincoln Park?
Chan Ho.
Red licorice or black licorice?
Red.
Buy or sell? The phrase, Sneed for speed.
That is a good, that's gold if you're a journalist. Sneed for speed.
When I heard that, I immediately thought of Brad. Because he loves crappy puns.
Oh, Lord. We have a buddy who's a disgusting punter.
I think he's already tagged us on a few on Twitter while we're recording this during the Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, Fitz pick trick, I think. Oh, Lord. Don't encourage him.
So, Mike, how was Butte last week?
You know, Butte was great. Got to spend some time in uptown Butte, I guess it is. Right at the Cavalier Lounge in the lovely Hotel Finlen.
Hotelfinlen.com. Finlen.
Best rates in town. Great rooms. They've cleaned them up. Looks great in there. The smooth hopperator is, in fact, awesome.
Did you try it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What'd you have?
Oh, man, I can't remember. It's terrible, Luke. What's funny is Bear Tycoon said to me, get a picture with you and Brent at the Finland, and I forgot. So I apologize to everybody involved.
But you can go to hotelfinland.com right now and book a room at tremendous rates.
Hotel Finland, that's FINLEN.com. And with that, let's get back to the show. So this week, Grizz traveled to Cal Poly. I know we all have our own personal nightmares, but Cal Poly is my personal nightmare in Grizz football. It feels like over the last 10 plus years, we just can't stop them. Remember, they're the team that came in after Stitt's big win against North Dakota State. Just doesn't look, I never look forward to it.
Yeah, so you go back, we've lost three in a row to Cal Poly. We lost 42-41 2 years ago. 2019, right after the North Dakota State win. Night game, gray granite jerseys. It was such a, yeah. And then in 2014, we got smoked 41-21 there in Cal Poly. So, a lot of bad memories of late.
What's their secret sauce?
Well, they run the triple option, but they kind of run a variation of the triple option.
Describe for some of our listeners what you mean by the triple option.
I mean, if you play regular football, this isn't it. No, I mean, basically, it's almost, it's funny because it's probably more recognizable to fans today with the zone read game and the run pass option game, but it's basically where teams use interesting formations and get two or three speedy guys in the backfield and will run an option where it's like the first guy's got the first gap or the second gap, the second guy's got, you know, the next one up, and the other guy's kind of goes outside, and it's just the quarterback reads it, and if the quarterback's got the read, he keeps the ball. If he doesn't have the read, he pitches it to the next guy, and it can happen so late that the linebackers and the D linemen really have to stay in their assignments because the whole thing is premised on hoping that, like, if Brent's the nose tackle and you and I are lined up next to him, that we're going to overcorrect going for the quarterback and they're going to be able to bump it out around it. Is that a fair layman's explanation of the option?
Makes sense to me.
Better than I could have done.
Yeah. I can't X's and O's it for you because I'm not that guy. I can tell you it's frustrating.
Well, and of course, we're going to get to see a guy that it seems like he has been at Cal Poly for, I don't know, a good 20 years. Fullback Joe Prothero.
Man.
This guy already has 520 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns on the season. They've cycled through a couple quarterbacks already. Their starter, who was their starter last year, got hurt 4 games in. Got hurt against in their opening, but did come back and is going to be the guy we'll see again. But what they really lean on is this guy, Prothero. He's a big dude. I believe he's about 225 pounds. He is the first option in the triple. He's the up-the-gut guy. And he has so far done pretty well this year for himself. Doesn't really show in the record book for Cal Poly because they're 1-3 so far.
Leading Cal Poly is an experienced offensive line. They start 3 seniors and 2 juniors, and that troubles me in a big way after giving up a shit ton of yards against Sac State.
Mm-hmm. The thing that kind of gives me a little bit of positive on this game, though, is clearly their defense is terrible. Like, they've given up a lot of points.
Yeah, their defense is giving up almost 300 yards per game on the ground. And this was a crazy thing. So Eastern Washington last week put 70 points on them. I think ran for damn near like 400 yards or something.
They play a 3-4, and their 3 are a freshman and 2 redshirt freshmen.
Oh, wow.
So I think it explains how terrible they are up on the defensive end. But really, they run this ball control game. They want to grind out the clock, limit possessions. And if Joe Prothero and the triple option can score and get the lead, sometimes it's a little too tough to play catch up.
Yeah. I mean, the Grizz have to prove to me that they can stop them. The big key on an option team is if you can stop the first few drives and get out ahead, you kind of try and take them out of their game and make them pass. Who knows?
The interesting thing that you can take away from Cal Poly so far this year, they've already put the ball on the ground 13 times in 4 games.
Cow.
They've lost 7 fumbles. Eastern Washington took 2 of those fumbles to the house last week. So this is something, this Grizzly defense, that ball is going to be on the ground a couple times. So you think back to the Northern Iowa game where they fumbled 4 times.
We didn't get them.
We didn't get a single one. And then you think about, like, the next week, a few weeks ahead, the Grizz were able to take a little bit more advantage of fumbles against Drake the next week. So Cal Poly's going to serve up some opportunities. You've got to get a few of those.
Boy, that is quite the statistic. You should have seen Lucan's expression when they put that out. They're both like, holy cow.
Yeah, they've lost 7 turnovers. Of course, they've thrown no interceptions because they hardly throw the ball. They've only forced 2 turnovers themselves, so they're -5 on the season. But I'll say Western Illinois was also -5 when we came into that game, and we kind of corrected that for them pretty quick, too.
I see this as a huge opportunity for the Grizz.
Mm-hmm.
Last week kind of felt like a little bit of a coming-of-age game. We came back twice, but we were at home. They have to take care of business on the road if they're truly going to be a great team. We have 4 of our remaining 7 games on the road. To really be a playoff team or to establish yourself as a true top 20 team, you're going to have to beat a team on the road that has some experience, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at it like if the Grizz could ideally win every home game, which is a tall order, they're going to need to win at least 2 games on the road from here on out. And so what have you got? You've got Cal Poly this weekend.
North Dakota. Southern Utah and Idaho.
And Idaho. So suddenly, yeah, like this would be a great way to get out the gate. This is a big game for the Grizz to prove that they're moving in the right direction. That this Sac State was just the game was the sign of more good things to come.
Yep, I feel that way too. I think to be successful in this game, I mean, obviously the Grizz have to play their game and let's play our game. Don't let them dictate to us what we're doing. What I'd like to see them improve on is, if we get the ball inside the other team's 30, we need to get touchdowns. Need more touchdowns down there. So I'd like to see him improve on that. And I would love to see, and it's granted, you know, Cal Poly is not this amazing passing threat, but I would love to see our defense figure out that over the middle stuff even a little bit. Because we cut that off a little bit, and it's like that's a big chunk of our game.
Well, and you know what Cal Poly is going to do, because the amount of time that they're going to do this triple option stuff, there's going to be, 10 to 12 to maybe 15 times in the game where their quarterback is going to keep the ball, step back, and fire something 25, 30, 40 yards down the field as a deep shot. And so in some of these games in the past for the Grizz, it's burned us bad because safeties are up. They're 10 to 15 yards off line of scrimmage. They let a guy get right through, and quarterback doesn't have to be too accurate if he's got a wide open field to chuck a ball into. So
yeah,
it's tough in college football to scheme for these interesting offenses, the unique offenses, because you only have a week. There's a finite amount of time to practice, and I think it can really take some time to figure out the ins and outs of this offense. The Grizz practice team, right? The offense is going to have to figure out some iteration of the triple option to run against our first defense.
You know, the good thing is at least we've got some speed to make that scout team legitimate
with the triple option. You know, we've got Garrett Graves back there at QB, who's physical, mobile dude. And so
he's a phenomenal guy to run scout team.
I'm going to bet you Garrett Graves is probably the Khalil Jenkins, who's Cal Poly's QB, who's playing as him this week and hopefully showing us as much as possible.
Knock on the snot on guys like he did in that one practice we saw in fall camp where he running and ran right over a guy, chucked him.
No, Sandry. He planted Sandry on his backside. Yeah, that was something.
But Sandry was pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yelling at him about being in a tackle-free jersey and you're going to stiff-arm me. That was great. I'm sure Halp loved every second of it.
All right, so we've played Cal Poly 8 times in the last 10 years. We are 4-4 in those games.
Okay.
Point differential, this is average. So Cal Poly on average is scoring 28.25 points per game. Montana's scoring 29.6.
Oh,
man. You talk about it basically, I mean, you could say it just like first to 30 might win, but I mean, historically, you look at these, we've got 2 1-point losses in a row. We've got that thrilling overtime win where Brock Coyle picked off the QB right at the goal line. That was a 7-point win. We've got a 2-point loss in 2010, and we've got a 2-point win all the way going back to 2008. So these games historically with Cal Poly, we've never really crushed them. We put it to them. We beat it. Our biggest win against them was a 14-point win in 2011. Everything else was less than one score.
But what's interesting is prior to that, they were still a team from California that ran the triple option, and we would blow them out in the Hauk era, really, if you think about it. Like, Cal Poly was never the option team we struggled with as much as when we'd see option teams in the playoffs.
Like Wofford. Oh, okay, come on.
We can't just focus on that.
So I usually try to calibrate like what to expect on whether or not I think, is this team better than, let's say, Sac State or Western Illinois? But it feels like it's not a good comparison because it's such an idiosyncratic scheme.
Exactly, because I mean the answer is no. I mean they're nowhere near as good as Sac State, but
this still feels like kind of a coin flip on the road. I think it comes down to whether or not the Grizz are ready to put four quarters together, and can they do that on the road?
Mm-hmm. The one good thing is I will say, the way they've overcome hot starts by the other team in the last 2 weeks puts them in a good mental frame of mind to play an option team, because there's nothing more frustrating than you think you've got everything perfectly set up and then they run this freaking option and they break off one for 60 yards and a touchdown and it's infuriating. So it's like, can you come back and answer that?
Yep. So the other thing we talked about before we got the pod going was Cal Poly's schedule. And I know these coaches tell these guys not to look ahead, of course. So they got smoked by North Dakota State 49-3. They lost to Weber in a closer one 24-17. They beat 0-2 Brown 44-15, and then they got obliterated by Eastern 70-17. So they host us. They go to Sac State, probably not favored in that. They host Davis. Definitely not favored. They go to NAU, who should have Cookus back by then.
Should beat them.
They go to Montana State in November. That's going to be a really boring game to watch. They host Idaho State late. That could be a win. And then they go to Southern Utah. They have a brutal schedule. I mean, they played number one North Dakota State. They played Weber State, who I think is in the top 10. Now they're playing, then they played Eastern Washington, and now they're playing us. That is a really tough way to get out the gate.
Or play the whole season. Yeah. Man, that's rough. And mentally, you got to think, is that building on them? Like, you know, they say don't look ahead, but players know. I mean, players know who the good teams are. It'll be interesting because teams are always up to play the Grizz. I would love it because when was the last time that we really had a convincing road win? Did we get one good one in Portland State a couple years ago?
Not really.
No? Not really. Yeah, when I can't think of the last real convincing road win. I mean, the Cats a couple years ago in Stitt's first year, but that's kind of a different game because...
We had a good North Dakota win. I think that was maybe Stitt's first year as well, too. High scoring, like Grizz put up 55 or something. Mm-hmm. But really, I mean, the fact that we have to like think and, oh, you know, 2015, there was this great road win. There was a few that year, but it's just, it's hard to find a bunch.
I tell you, I mean, if the Grizz come out and dominate this game, it says a lot about mentally where the Grizz are in my mind. I also think this week... I think this is the week that Snead and the receivers hit their stride. Mm. It's getting closer every week, and they're going to break out at some point. There's going to be a game where we get a couple long passes, and I feel like this might be it.
This could be the one. Yeah, this could be the one. But again, you just look at the stats, how bad Cal Poly's been burned on the ground. I feel like this is going to be just a further confidence builder. Yeah, lots of runs. I think this might be the game where we see maybe 100, 150 for Eastwood. You see like his maybe big confidence builder game.
You know what was interesting is in this wrap-up of Snead getting 200 yards this past weekend, you know, they were going through like last 200-yard rushing performance, which was a long time ago. But the last 100-yard rushing performance was McKenna Simmons last year in the NAU game when he came in to replace Hill at QB. So the last 100-yard performance was a QB. The last one before that was Peter Wynn, which was the last. John Wynn. I mean, we have not had a 100-yard rusher on the ground from a running back in a long time.
That's incredible. I would have never guessed that.
You look at Snead on the season. He's got 371 yards on the ground. You combine Eastwood, Lee, and Calhoun, they've got 221. And, I mean, so Snead's averaging 6.3 yards per carry, where the rest of our backs are 3.35 per carry.
Eastwood had four this week.
He had four, but if you want to hand the ball off, you should give it to a wide receiver. So Jerry Lou McGee and Gabe Salter are averaging 23.5 yards per carry.
You can't argue with facts.
So there you go. Stats are stats.
That's a stats are for losers probably type of comment.
All right. Let's jump into the Big Sky. So this week, Portland State goes to Idaho. Luke, we'll let you take the lead on this.
Clearly, Idaho's going to win this at home. They're a terrific team. Who do you have, Mike?
I'm going to go with Idaho only because if Portland State can't beat MSU... in Portland, I don't think they're going to go to Idaho and beat Idaho.
Okay.
I wouldn't sleep on Portland there. You know, I watched them against that Cat game. Cats have a good-ish defense, right? Like, it's okay. They were
smoking.
Yeah. Smoking a cigarette. Greg Rack's combing his hair.
Drinking Budweiser.
Having some beers. Lord. Idaho might be just demoralized. I would not be surprised. I mean, I would assume Idaho will be favored. I wouldn't be surprised if because Portland had okay team speed. They just, I don't know, they didn't look that great because Barnes teams aren't that hot.
Portland to cover?
What's the spread?
No idea.
Yes.
There you go. It's a lock. Brent tied it in.
Tell parlay that.
North Dakota at Northern Colorado.
North Dakota's going to win this game.
Yeah. I would like to think so as well.
Yeah.
Eastern Washington at Montana State.
Eastern Washington hopefully scores 100 points.
I would love nothing more than that. Nothing.
You know, for the sake of wanting to win the Big Sky, I would never cheer for the Bobcats. They are going to lose. But if they gave a team we didn't play a loss... and we could beat them at the end, it would help. I don't think the Grizz are probably going to be in the discussion at the end of the season to win the Big Sky, but stranger things have happened. Eastern's going to kick the shit out of them, though.
Northern Arizona at Idaho State.
I'm conflicted, Mike.
I'm conflicted on this one, too.
I'm going to go ahead and pick Northern Arizona. I think that was an aberration for Idaho State last week.
Well, I'm going to give Idaho State the win at home.
Wow, you always go chalk. You haven't picked one upset this whole year.
Whoa, that is not true. And who's got the better record, Lucas? Oh, Lord. So I don't think I missed anybody. That we've got a couple teams on byes this week, so it's kind of a small Big Sky schedule. So that brings us to Montana at Cal Poly.
I think Montana is going to win this game. I have a lot of faith that they're taking strides every week. I think it's going to continue. I think Bobby is building a culture here, and the players are buying in. A couple mistakes. You know, Curran dropped some passes. He's not going to continue to do that. He's a tremendous player. We gave up some big home run touchdowns, right? We're going to clean those up. Our safeties aren't going to tackle each other anymore. We're a better team than Cal Poly, and I think we're going to do it on the road.
I'm with you. I'm going Montana for pretty much the same reasons. I think that the Grizz have shown in their first four games that while they might not be the most talented team in the Big Sky by a long shot, they're fighting in every game. Buzz had some sort of comment this week in either the post game or in an interview where he basically said, we're coached to play and fight for 60 minutes. And that's the one thing that's changed around here.
Mm.
Paraphrase, but I mean, that's a pretty damn telling quote.
I would see a Grizz win too. I think it's going to be close because it's Cal Poly, and my God, these games are always just awful. Cal Poly is going to hold the ball for 40 minutes of the game, and they're going to score 21 to 24 points probably. Hopefully, it would seem like, though, I think with the Grizz ground game, and I think I would expect to see a good passing game as well here too. What will be interesting to see is how defensively they look, because a lot of these teams we've faced so far are these kind of mixed skill, you know, balanced or pass heavy type of teams. Are they going to keep the three safety set, or would you maybe tinker with something where you put your best guys on the field, you get Jace Lewis out there with Josh Buss?
Interesting.
And Dante Olsen. Yeah, and that's the one thing which I really like is that we've got some great linebacker play right now. I mean, phenomenal linebacker play, and that's against an option team. That's where you need it, and so I really like that part of this game. So I see a Grizz win. It's probably going to be one of these ones that doesn't get solved till late in the fourth, but probably a 7-10 point type of win.
Sounds good to me.
So we also have Southern Utah, UC Davis, Weber State, Sac State on byes.
Okay, so yeah, that makes sense. So it's a small week in the Big Sky, but hey, great time to put some distance up there. Jump to 2-0 if they can pull it off. I mean, that'd be a good start. Like, that's as good as you could hope for them to start.
Other awesome FCS games this week. We have North Dakota State playing South Dakota State.
Oh, yeah.
That's a 1-3 matchup. And there's got to be some sort of, like,
it's a rivalry game.
Rivalry thing going on there.
Do you know, is it in North Dakota or South Dakota?
It is in North Dakota.
Okay, so I guess I think North Dakota's going to win. I think it's one of those where if it was in South Dakota, I'd see South Dakota maybe pulling off the upset. But one year, sooner or later, North Dakota State's going to be good but not great, right? This probably isn't the year.
Okay, so did you see, though, Andrew Schmidt's hot take on Twitter that if Bobby did not leave for the UNLV job, North Dakota State would not exist as a dynasty?
That's a parallel universe type theory that I love.
He took some heat for that.
Oh, man, yeah, he did. But yeah, I did.
I love it.
Boy, I don't buy it. I mean, I think that they would have had some fun games in the playoffs. But, man, these North Dakota State teams the last 7 years are just incredible.
Carson Wentz doesn't become Carson Wentz if Bobby Houck stays in the Big Sky Conference. Double down, Andrew Schmidt.
Carson Wentz would be a Grizz.
Man, there we go.
Kennesaw State, number 5, also hosts Samford. Jacksonville State, number 10, hosts number 24, Austin Peay.
Peay? I always thought they put a V in there. It's like PV. Like, I know it's not spelled with a V, but whatever, doesn't matter.
Anything on that?
So Kennesaw State is one of those teams that it's like, it's their second year of eligibility at the FCS level. They made the playoffs last year. It's like, are they going to come down to earth or not? But they're an option team. So it's like, who knows?
Okay. Sam Houston State, number 11, hosts number 14, Central Arkansas. And number 11, Villanova, hosts number 20, Stony Brook.
So there's some good top 20 matchups, or top 25 matchups.
Yeah.
You can look at for the Grizz as well, too, then. You've got an opportunity here. Right now we're ranked 17th, I think, in most polls, 17th or 18th. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be some opportunity to move. So hopefully it's something they can take advantage of, get back into the top 15, maybe even push close to 12. Or I don't think they get in top 10, but, you know, get closer to it.
Yeah. Interesting to see.
One other interesting matchup this week is undefeated Centerville will meet undefeated Shelby in an exciting 8-man football matchup that has playoff implications. What's your take on that one, Mike?
Well, Centerville doesn't sound like a real place. It sounds like the rival of Springfield on The Simpsons. So I'm going to go with Shelby for a couple reasons, none of which are that you are a proud Shelby Coyote. But I am an adopted Shelby Coyote. I've got a state championship basketball shirt from a couple years ago. I don't think it fits anymore. But, you know, I'll be wearing that proud.
You've been to the Mariah's Fair?
I've Mariah's Fair fun time.
What's your take, Brent?
You know, I'm going upset. Centerville by 3.
Oh, man, we were not going to tell Luke's dad.
Wow. Expect some hate mail.
That's right. Your parents listen to this. Yeah. I might be persuaded if they tweet at me before the game starts.
I will be dazzled if my parents figure out Twitter.
Well, awesome. One thing that I kind of want to get your guys' takes on a little bit, doesn't really fit in anywhere in the pod, but how cool was it to be at the stadium between the first and second quarters this week when they brought Dave Dickinson out for his Hall of Fame plaque induction there? That was, I mean, you talk about loud. That's as sustained loud as I think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, that was cool. It was just fun to have the guy back. It was crazy. Like, he actually hadn't been back for a Grizz game. Of course, he had his football career. But it was just fun to see the guy and to see the highlights. And I really liked the mic'd up moment where he was talking to the team and interacting with the guys. The whole thing was just, I had chills. It was so fun.
Yeah, I had chills too. And it's like, I was, you know, I'm down there in the north end zone. And so it was two kids and his wife, who none of them were, you know, they're not University of Montana. I mean, obviously his kids weren't born. And his wife is not a University of Montana person. She's a Canadian. He met her up playing in the CFL. So they weren't part of this. And it's like, his wife look to me from a distance like she might be crying. Like, this was such a cool, like, and we talked about it last week, but it's like so much of what we are as a program is due to him and what he embodies.
Yeah. It's a funny idea to think that she didn't ever really get how big of a deal he is here. And he's like, yeah, you know, I had this illustrious college career at the FCS level. Like,
yeah, I get it.
And he's super popular. But then you show up to tens of thousands of Grizzly fans wearing your husband's number. And, like, everyone is walking around like a god. And, like, she's like, oh, my God.
You really were a big deal.
And I happened to bump into him. He was going up into the press box to talk on the radio as I was coming down at halftime to go meet up with a friend. And he couldn't have been nicer. I bothered him for a selfie and told him congratulations. And he was so kind.
Did you book him on the pod?
I didn't. It didn't come to me.
We are not quite at the point where we know in the moment to do that.
Man, that's true, but it was all, I was in slow motion for me. I was like, oh, pulling out my phone, hope I wouldn't drop it. Yeah. Like, didn't want him to judge me, like, what an athlete.
Yeah, it was so cool. I didn't want to close the pod without talking about that for a couple minutes, because it was such a cool event to be a part of.
Totally agree.
Awesome. I think that is it, unless you guys have anything wonderful.
No, I'm good.
Sweet. Well, we'll see you next week, unless we know you, which we'll talk to you a little bit sooner.
Go Grizz.
Right on.